This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hello, and welcome to a very special episode of the West Wing Weekly. I've always wanted to be part of a very special episode. On this Memorial Day, when we honor those who have died while serving in our country's armed forces, we welcome to our show Melissa Fitzgerald, whom you all know for her work as Carol for seven seasons on The West Wing, but we're also going to talk to her about her career in public service. Melissa Fitzgerald, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. I am so enjoying listening to the podcast.
So you've actually been rewatching the show and listening to the podcast?
I have been. I haven't watched every episode fully because I have this, I have a grown-up job now, so I'm spending a lot of time doing that. So I haven't had time to watch all of them, but I have watched several of them and I've listened to every podcast.
That is so awesome.
I've known you for a long time. We're old friends, but can you tell us how you wound up on the show?
Well, my then boyfriend, now ex-husband, who you know quite well, Josh, Noah Emmerich, is a wonderful actor and great person. It was the year before West Wing went on the air when Sports Night was going to be on the air. And he had, I guess his agent had given him both the scripts for Sports Night and The West Wing. And he asked me what I thought of them and gave them to me. And I read them. And I came back to him with something that I stand by now. The Sports Night is going to be the best show on TV. Huh. And The West Wing is going to be the best show ever on TV. I think I was right.
You could tell just from those scripts.
I could, in my opinion, absolutely. I hadn't read anything that even came close to that. And in addition to that, I felt like it was an important moment for us as a nation to have a show like that, that really celebrates public service. And I think that's beautiful and valuable. And I wanted to be part of it. And, Josh knows that I haven't always been as ambitious in my career, but I really wanted to be a part of The West Wing. And I told my agent, when this cast, I want to be part of this show and I don't care what I do.
And let me ask you this, were you reading for Carol or for another role, or had that play out?
There was no Carol when I started the series. I was staffer number two. I knew that I wasn't going in for the two parts they asked me to prepare, which were so long ago, Donna and Mallory. And I knew I wasn't up for either of those. I knew I was just up for a very small part, but they wanted me to prepare both of those because those would be the audition pieces. And I went in, and then the second time when I got called back, I wore the same outfit that I had worn to the first audition.
As Dulé told us, you must do.
Exactly. And my friend was over, and as I came, downstairs to leave, I walked in front of a sort of floor-to-ceiling window, and the light was shining through it. And she said, "Ooh, I can see through your skirt." And I was like, wow, it's a little too late for me to run up and change. So they're not going to have a floor-to-ceiling window in the room where I'm auditioning and have me stand in front of it. And she said, no, you're right. So I went to the audition and I went into the room. Sure enough, floor-to-ceiling window in the corner. But I sat down in the chair, said hello, talked for a second, and there were quite a few people in the room. And I was reading opposite Aaron. And so I sat down in front of him and they said, could you go stand over by the window? And usually I'm pretty compliant and would go do that immediately. But I sat in my chair and said, I'm really comfortable right here. And they said, well, we'd really prefer you to go stand. And I held on and held firm and said, I'd really prefer to do it seated. So I'm a little bit shocked that they actually didn't think I was some weirdo and they still hired me. And very grateful.
And you and AJ have great chemistry on screen and off. Was that immediate?
It was actually immediate. It's funny because I have not watched the show since it was on the air, but Allison, Janney, and I actually did watch the pilot together. I guess it was 2 months ago now, and neither of us had seen it in many, many years. And it was very sweet to watch it. And I'm so happy I got to watch it with her. And I think my line was something, if you all would walk this way or something.
That's a very cute visual. You and Allison rewatching the pilot. that's very sweet.
Well, she's certainly been an incredible friend, as you know, everyone on the show has been. And I think, Josh, you've talked about this before on the podcast. It's a pretty remarkable group. And I think it was a real family. We were together for 7 years. We all went through a lot together. Children were born, people got married, people got divorced. People passed. I mean, it was, we went through a lot together. And I really give a lot of credit to Martin and to John Spencer for kind of being the parents of the show and strengthening that family.
One thing that Janelle Maloney told us, you're actually the godmother to her son?
I am. I'm the godmother to her beautiful older son, Julian, and I feel so lucky. And we were joking about it because we always talk about how we're a family. And when she asked me to be Julian's godmother, you know, after crying for a little bit about it, because I was so touched, you know, she said, well, now we're really family. I mean, you've codified it and we're stuck for life with each other. And I couldn't be happier about that. And I really feel like part of her family. I feel like she's part of my family. I feel that way about so many of the people, about you, Josh, and mm-hmm. and Allison. And, you know, last year I had a big birthday, and I'm not going to say which one it was, but Josh knows. And, you know, Allison and Janelle came to Philadelphia to my parents' house and surprised me. And it was just very touching.
Well, let's fast forward a little bit. How did you make the leap from being on the West Wing to having this life in public service? Did you guys talk about that stuff on set?
Oh, so much. I've always been involved in public service since I was a little girl. My parents are both involved in public service and in our community. My dad was an assistant district attorney my entire childhood, and he's been a judge for most of my adult years. And Martin really is so involved in social justice issues and really comes from the most incredible place, and seeing he's tireless in his advocacy on behalf of other people and the things that he believes in and cares about. And he is truly just a real role model of how you can have a life in art and in social justice. He and I actually have worked together quite a bit on a lot of social justice issues, and he's one of the reasons that I'm doing what I'm doing right now. He got me involved in National Association of Drug Court Professionals in 2011. He asked me to come speak at their national conference here in DC. He knew that my dad was a treatment court proponent, and he also knew that I had recently lost a friend to addiction. And I was certainly honored to join Martin at that conference in 2011. And they had just recently launched Justice for Vets, because veterans treatment courts are based on drug courts, but they've only been around. The first one was launched in 2008, so they're pretty new. And I got involved as a supporter of Justice for Vets back in 2011, but it wasn't till 2013, or the end of 2013, that I came on board to work for the organization.
So can you tell us, what is a veterans treatment court?
They ensure that when a veteran struggles with the transition home, gets in trouble with the law because of a mental health disorder, substance use disorder, and or trauma, that they receive the structure, treatment, and mentoring they need to get their lives back on track. It is part of the court system, but they're unlike any other courtroom I've ever seen. They're life-saving courtrooms. And, you know, they're staffed by criminal justice professionals, like, you know, judge, prosecutor, defense attorney, probation. But there's also a mental health care provider, a representative from the Veterans Administration, a volunteer veteran mentor, among others. And they are specially trained, and we do a lot of the training of the court teams, but they're specially trained to work together. It's non-adversarial. So they're there to work together to assess and treat the veterans who appear before them. So they're incredibly rigorous programs. Like they can often take like 18 to 24 months to complete. And the first phase, if you participate in a veterans treatment court program, you appear weekly in front of the judge and the team, and the judge will order PTS treatment or treatment for addiction, and it's strict accountability, and there are sanctions and rewards, and they're just incredibly effective programs. It's an alternative to incarceration. So I'll just give you an example of a person. He did 3 tours in Iraq. He returned home, was prescribed opioid painkillers, got addicted to those, and couldn't get those anymore, and switched to heroin in order to support his habit. Like, after getting kicked out of his home, after losing his girlfriend, losing his job, he ended up forging a check. He got arrested for forging the check, and there happened to be a veterans treatment court, you know, in his jurisdiction. If there's not a veterans treatment court in your jurisdiction, you're kind of out of luck. And he qualified for it because he was dealing with a substance use disorder and PTSD. So he had a mental health issue as well. So he qualified for it. He agreed to participate in it. And he told me when he first appeared in front of the judge, he said, it was really the first time that a judge asked me my name, treated me with respect, thanked me for my service, and said that she believed in me and that I could do this. And he said, you know, I was just thinking I wanted to get through the program that I could use again. And he said, and after a couple of months of being in this program, he said, something shifted in me. And I got the gift of sobriety, and I got the gift of having my life back. And he's doing incredibly well now, as are so many of the veterans that go through these programs. They are incredibly successful programs, and they are based, as I mentioned, on the drug court model, which is the most studied, the most successful criminal justice model in the history of our country. And I am so excited to see that model being applied to veterans as well. And I look forward to participating in their expansion even further, because in 2008, there were 0 veterans treatment courts. The first one was launched then. There are now over 260 veterans treatment courts across the country. And today, over 13,000 veterans are receiving life-saving treatment in veterans treatment courts all across the country.
Do you have a vision for how many of these veterans treatment courts could or should be operating?
I mean, there are over 3,000 jurisdictions in the country, and there are about 264 veterans treatment courts. By our estimate, about 2,000 should put a veterans treatment court within reach of every veteran in need.
So there's a long way to go.
So there's a lot of work to be done, but a lot of work has already been done, yep, which is exciting. And, you know, I said there are over 260 veterans treatment courts. There are hundreds more in different stages of planning and implementation, and that's exciting to me. You know, I had mentioned my father is a big treatment court proponent, and he's one of the people that launched a mental health court in Philadelphia years ago. And when I asked him about treatment courts, he looked at me and said, anyone who knows anything about these courts is for them. Hmm. And they're for them because they work.
It's not divided on partisan lines or anything like that.
Absolutely not. No. Veterans treatment courts work, and treatment courts in general work. What's exciting to see is that they work really no matter what your concern is, whether your concern is reducing crime, you have to support veterans treatment courts because they reduce crime. If you are interested in saving the taxpayer a tremendous amount of money, you got to support veterans treatment courts because they save the taxpayer a tremendous amount of money. If you care about restoring our families and lowering, you know, prison population and lowering recidivism rates, you got to be for veterans treatment courts because right, they do all that. And if you are concerned about honoring our veterans and their service, that's one way to express your gratitude, is to support veterans treatment courts. You know, this beautiful West Wing episode that sort of got us talking about this in the first place is about we are a grateful nation. And I believe in that episode, Toby wants to express his gratitude and express his care. And he does that by helping provide a burial for a veteran with full military honors in our nation's most hallowed ground. And I found that very touching and beautiful. He wanted to take an action and express his gratitude in his feet. And that's something I believe in too, that gratitude and honoring must be expressed through actions and not just words. You know, one of the things about this episode, which I think is beautiful, and even though I'm not in it, I love it. It's one of my favorite episodes. You know, I think it really shows how much we as Americans, and whether we are the president or the communications director or whoever, we all care about our veterans and have a tremendous amount of gratitude. And just many of us just don't know what we can do to support. And I just think it's beautiful how Toby really is changed by his experience of getting to know someone even after death. And then, you know, something else that I was thinking about Mrs. Landingham, I love that scene.
Talking about her boys.
Yes, I just found that the first time I watched it, and then again when I watched it yesterday, so touching and heartbreaking, and also not inconsistent with my experience of many of the family members of our men and women who have served. And most of the people she worked with probably had no idea that she had two sons that she lost, and she didn't really talk about their service. And it was part of her and part of her life that she carried with her. And I just think that's important for us to remember and to reach out to each other in our communities and to our neighbors and how we can support each other, because you never know what somebody's going through. When I first started at Justice for Vets, you know, obviously I had a huge learning curve. And you guys made a joke about people in public service, especially on the West Wing, having no private life because they work all the time. And that certainly has been true for me since I've come here. I was often at my office till like 10, 11 at night, pretty consistently. And a lot of times that's when my phone would ring, and it would be calls from family members of veterans for whom it was too late for us to help. Mother of, her daughter had married her high school sweetheart. He had gone off to Iraq and come back with post-traumatic stress. And he ended up accidentally killing someone because of his PTSD. And he's in jail. And, you know, he's not going to qualify for a veterans treatment court. That's just, you know, you can't qualify for it if there's been death or serious bodily harm to another person. You know, public safety is still the most important thing. But I remember just listening to her, because there's nothing I could do. I told her there was nothing I could do, but I think she just wanted someone to talk to. I think it's important for me to take those calls, as difficult and as painful as they are. This is why we're doing what we're doing. And I have to remember there are real people that are benefiting from what we're doing. And our organizational goal is to put a veterans treatment court within reach of every veteran in need. And I remember thinking, just my personal little goal is to get fewer of these phone calls, and not because I'm not taking them, but because there's less of a need.
What can listeners do to chip in, or how can they be involved?
Well, I would say the first thing to do is to go onto our website, which is justiceforvets.org, and sign up for our email alerts, because there are going to be actions that we will need public support for. And when those come down the pike, we will send out email alerts and ask you to sign on to maybe a letter to an elected official or to some letter. And you'll know about it. You'll get an email alert. So please do that, because we need all the support we can get. And if you are in a position to donate, we could use that as well, because our mission at Justice for Vets is to put a veterans treatment court within reach of every veteran in need. And in order to do that, we need funding. So, you know, no money, no mission. And we want to achieve our mission.
And I can't think of a better way to honor our veterans and to observe this Memorial Day by making a donation to Justice for Vets and by raising your awareness and helping spread the word about these veteran treatment courts.
So people should go to justiceforvets.org right now, then sign up for the email newsletter and donate if you can. Josh and I will be donating on behalf of the podcast.
Oh, that's so nice. Thank you.
Yeah, we're honored to have you on here and really inspired by what you're doing.
You are an incredible person, Melissa Fitz. You are really inspiring, and I salute you for walking the walk.
Oh, you are incredibly sweet to say that, Josh.
If people have questions that they want to know more about it, can they tweet at you?
Absolutely. I am at, okay, the silliest Twitter name ever, but it's at Maffy Fitz, MaffyFitz.
There you go. And you can always find me and Josh at Josh Molina and at Rishi Hirway. The show is at West Wing Weekly, or you can leave a comment on our Facebook page, facebook.com/TheWestWingWeekly, or our website, thewestwingweekly.com. Melissa, thank you so much for talking to us and telling us this incredible story. We'd love to have you back to talk about episodes in the future, too.
Oh, for sure.
But for Memorial Day, we just couldn't think of a better person to talk to.
Well, thank you so much. And I love being part of it. And I love listening to it.
Thanks, Melissa.
Okay.
Okay.
What's next?
If you're looking for another podcast to listen to, check out Normal Gossip from Radiotopia. They're coming back for their 6th season. If you don't already know the show, they were named one of the best podcasts of the year by Time Magazine and Vulture, and their new season starts April 17th. Normal Gossip is really fun. It's a show about petty and ridiculous and strange stories and the way that we share those stories. The stories that they tell in the podcast are sent in by listeners, and then they're anonymized and then retold to a guest. And then they have to weigh in on the decisions that the people in the story are making. It's very funny and very beloved. So if you aren't already listening, check out the new season, which starts April 17th. You can listen to Normal Gossip wherever you get your podcasts.
Radiotopia.